Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast from KJZZ's The Show. Each Friday, we review the biggest and most important political stories of the week with a panel of experts, which puts those stories into perspective to help us understand why they matter. Here's this week's episode.
Affordability isn't a joke or some hoax. It is a real and consequential challenge that families across Arizona must grapple with every day.
We've seen a governor that wants to grow government spending, as you heard today. There are programs that she wants to invest in a time where Arizonans are, they're having a hard time with their funds. They're having a hard time with their economy.
80% of what the governor asked for is in this bill. We agree on not increasing SALT. No tax on tips. The governor wants it. I want it. No tax on overtime. The governor wants it. I want it.
If you put that bill on the floor, it should get, I would say, supermajority support. There's no reason to delay it other than Republicans wanting to hold middle-class families hostage in order to provide tax breaks for billionaires and corporations.
He definitely was a conservative, a lifelong conservative, and that guided his principles. But at the end of the day, it was about doing right by the people of Arizona, and he, you know, loved this state and loved the people he served.
And with me to talk about the start of the legislative session and its first policy dispute, as well as much more, are Marcus Dallartino of First Strategic. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And former State House Minority Leader Reginald Boulding. Reginald, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Let me start with you, Reginald. Governor's State of the State speech. What stood out to you from what she had to say this week?
Well, I think the governor hit on, you know, what everyday Arizonans are talking about, which is affordability. You know, I don't think it was a secret that she was going to talk about, you know, housing and, you know, health care and child care and really, you know, positioning that with the fact that Arizona has revenue issues right now. And I think that it was really important for her to, you know, talk about her own personal story, her own personal struggles of, you know, how everyday Arizonans have to make these decisions. And, you know, for her, her agenda this year, hopefully working with the legislature, is going to be to make sure that everyday Arizonans have the ability to live and thrive here in the state.
Marcus, what were your impressions?
I think we all knew affordability was going to be top of the ticket. I thought it was interesting. You know, keep in mind, this is a Democratic governor in a state that's a Republican majority. She's in an election year, so she's got to bridge some gap and be bipartisan, right? But she took they'd probably disagree with me on this, but a populist message on picking on a couple things that's popular across the aisle to pick on. One's data centers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we already know Neil Carter, very conservative Republican from Pinal County, is running a bill to get rid of the tax credit for data centers. The governor's on board and promoted that. And so now she didn't call out Neil specifically, but, you know, they're on the same page. That's very popular in Arizona right now. She challenged the data centers on water consumption, very popular in Arizona right now. And then the other one, I'm a fan, but picking on Airbnb. So, you know, that's a populist message in Arizona right now. I mean, we've really reached this threshold of how far are we going to go on this Airbnb thing. So I thought that was interesting that she sort of, you know, the political spectrum is not a flat line, it's a circle, and we're starting to see her meet up with the Republicans on a few issues.
Well, and she also didn't really talk as much about, for example, ESAs, the school vouchers, as she had in the past. You remember her first year, she called to basically totally undo the universal voucher expansion, which I'm sure she knew at the time was not going anywhere at the state capitol. Each year, she's tried to do some things to sort of rein it in a bit. This year, it seemed like less of a big deal in the speech.
I think she's really focused on tax conformity right now, at least. I think she does recognize the fact the chances of that getting reformed in this legislature are somewhere in between zero and not impossible. And so she hit it, and largely for a PR, but not for legal reasons, and is probably going to rely on her Democratic colleagues in the legislature to keep pounding that message and launch bills.
Marcus, Reginald, which issues stood out to you? I mean, Marcus talked about the Airbnb and the data centers, and she obviously talked about affordability, as you mentioned as well. Like, were there specific things that maybe surprised you that she talked a little bit about or that you're glad that she specifically hit on?
I mean, no. I mean, I think, you know, what Marcus talked through is absolutely what people every day are talking about. You know, there's significant issues. You know, you have Prop 123, which is a big issue that legislators have to make sure
that they get. The education funding initiative
that they have to make sure that they get, you know, passed. There has to be some consensus there, which I think is extremely important. I mean, you know, you can't open up a newspaper without seeing, you know, a school that's, you know, shutting down or, you know, teachers that are being laid off. That's a real thing. So, you know, making sure that they're able to, you know, fill those deficits is going to be important. But again, you know, those key issues, you know, in talking about, you know, water, you know, talking about, you know, housing, these are conversations that, you know, Republicans and Democrats are having. You know, even in D.C., you have, you know, Donald Trump talking about, you know, limiting corporations from buying, you know, homes. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a bill that, you know, Democrats in the state legislature have been running over the last 5 years. So you're starting to see some convergence on these issues that, you know, are centered around affordability.
All right. Here's the cynical question for you guys. How much of the speech was laying out policy for this year and how much of the speech was campaign speech?
You know, I don't know if there's a difference. I don't know if you can separate the two, right? I don't really think you can. I mean, at the end of the day, the governor's job is going to be to show Arizonans that they can, that she can deliver for them. And, you know, I think if you look over the last several years, she's had a pretty good case. And the legislature, they've worked collectively together. You know, there's been a number of vetoes, but when they've been able to come together on a budget, they've been able to get good things done. Now, at a federal level, that's been a total, a mess. But, you know, they've been ultimately able to get some things done together.
Marcus, what do you think? Campaign speech, policy speech?
I agree with Reggie on this one. I don't think I've seen a state of the state, both from the federal level or state level, that hasn't had some tone of politics in it. But politics is policy too, right? You're highlighting your strengths and you're limiting your weaknesses. So to that end, it's a political speech. Yeah, it's about policy, but both of them are intertwined.
Okay. So, Marcus, you mentioned tax conformity, which in most years is one of those subjects that you say it and people's eyes kind of glaze over. But this year, we might be looking at our first veto, possibly even today. The governor called for sort of a more limited set of conforming the state's tax code to what the federal government did in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The legislature has approved a bill that had more of what Congress and President Trump put into it. She hasn't said specifically, I'm going to veto this, but she's kind of made it clear that she's not a fan.
I think what probably would give you the clearest indication was the vote coming out of the legislature yesterday, which was a fully partisan vote, all Democrats against it, all Republicans for it. So to that end, if I were going to guess, I'm going to guess that we're looking at a veto. I would agree with you. Like, I got to tell you, I mean, there has never been an issue with tax conformity in 30 years of watching this stuff. It is the most boring bill that could ever pass. Mm-hmm. And usually it's unanimous and just gets moved along. The governor obviously wants the deduction for tips, overtime, et cetera, but the bill in the totality comes to about $240, $250 million. What the Republicans have done is limited. They took out the SALT deduction, and I'm not going to geek out and talk about what that is. They took out accelerated depreciation. I'm not going to geek out and talk about what that is. But, you know, that could be generally portrayed as helping the more wealthy. And so the Republicans in the legislature have taken that out and then retargeted those cuts to the more middle and less fortunate in the tax code. So but to that problem, it creates a bigger hole. So now we're up to $450 in the Republican budget. So really
$450 million.
So really, at the end of the day, the fight is not about necessarily – there are a couple issues, and one revolves around education, but there's a couple issues. But largely, this argument is coming down to how much it is going to be, less than it is about the policy.
Reginald, do you agree with that? That it's less about who is benefiting maybe from these tax breaks, and more about trying to decide how big a hole this is going to put in the state budget?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things, right? I do think when you look at, you know, if you conform to, you know, federal changes, and you look at the bill, you're talking about nearly a little bit over $1 billion over 3 years that would be lost. So, you know, you can cut revenue today, but that shows up as fewer classrooms, larger fees, deeper deficits for, you know, tomorrow. So I do think that's a real thing, right? You know, one of the things that is going to be extremely important right now is to make sure that either plan, they can actually talk about how they're going to pay for it. And I think the governor, you know, as she released, you know, her budget today, you know, she'll, you know, kind of talk through that. But, you know, you can't cut, you know, $450 million today and say, we'll figure out how we're going to pay for it tomorrow. It just doesn't work that way.
It's tough to cut 200 something million dollars out of the budget today and say, we'll figure out down the road how to pay for it too, though, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I think, like, you know, going into the question is, you know, there has to be some hard decisions that are going to need to be made. And, you know, it's going to ultimately line up with, you know, where are your, you know, your values and priorities. And, you know, I think the governor, she's, you know, looked at some places where you can get revenue, you know, as she, you know, looked at Target, you know, Airbnb and, you know, looking at data centers and, you know, ending some of these subsidies. And so she's trying to find opportunities for revenue. But more or less, I would say, the big thing regarding this tax conformity is, I'm going to use the word leverage. You know, this is something that's at the top of the list for the Republican legislature. And I think the governor also has some really big things that she won as well. And I think this provides her an opportunity to leverage some of her goals with, you know, the goal of the Republican legislature.
I just want to make sure every Arizonan understands this, because she hit a little bit on this point, but most people don't know that this exists. And I'm specifically talking to any Republican congressman from Arizona. The federal government owes us over $700 million. And that is due to immigration enforcement in Arizona, where we spent Arizona state taxpayer money on a federal responsibility. They've agreed that they owe states that have done that money. There's over $700 million that the feds have not cut back to Arizona. We need to get that money. It's not my responsibility as an Arizona taxpayer to fund a federal responsibility. It equates to a double taxation, and I am not a fan of taxes in the first place, much less double taxing me. So let's go get that money back, and that would ease a lot of the issues that we're talking about at the state of Arizona.
Marcus, when you talk about trying to fill in the gap, we heard from House Appropriations Committee Chair David Livingston this week, who essentially said, look, maybe one way to do this is to pass a fairly clean version of the Prop 123 extension. The state, of course, had to backfill that, had to pay general fund money in the current fiscal year's budget, 300 some odd million dollars. That would cover the governor's proposal, not entirely the Republicans' proposal. But I wonder, like, wasn't that money that in theory was going to be going to schools anyway, assuming that they sent something to the voters and voters approved it? Like, is that really filling a hole?
Well, it's filling a hole from the general fund. And I guess that's probably where the technical part of this exists. So the question is, if you pass 123 with the voters, then that money's coming out of state land. So the proceeds are on sale of state lands, releases from state lands, versus not doing it means that $300 million is coming out of the general fund. So passing it gives you $300 million more in the general fund to play with. And frankly, it just makes fiscal sense.
But they only had to pay it last year because they didn't send something to the voters in the first place, right?
Correct. That is correct. And there doesn't – I thought it was odd. I would be a little bit more exercised, I think, if I were a legislator about getting $300 million. But I guess in this grand scheme of things, $300 million is not as much as I – seem to think
it
is.
19 some odd billion dollar budget. Right. Interesting.
But yeah, I expect it. And also, it's a lesson in the totality of fiscal discussions, right? Yes, right now we're focused on tax conformity, but it is part of a state budget, and Prop 123 is part of a state budget. So we're going to have an exercise and a little give and take.
Just one more quick question before we move on to each of you. Reginald, you talked about leverage before the break with the governor. Like, there's a very obvious deadline here, right? People have to file their taxes in April. There are forms that are already, you know, some people like to get a head start and start filing their taxes even now. How do you see this playing out? Because it looks like there's a pretty deep chasm, both money-wise and policy-wise, between the legislature and governor. They got to get this figured out.
No, they absolutely have to get it figured out. And, you know, the best way to do that is for the governor to set some type of deadline, right? The legislature works against deadlines. And you know, if you're able to say that, hey, you know, in order for us to, you know, reissue forms, or in order for us to, you know, make sure that we're actually not going to delay taxpayers, we have to do it by X date, I think that kind of gets the ball rolling a little bit, you know, more. But, you know, the legislature moved pretty quick. I think the governor, she's going to be very aggressive this, you know, this upcoming week. And, you know, my hope is that they're absolutely able to come to an agreement. The worst possible thing would be for taxpayers to have to file taxes twice because we weren't able to figure this thing out.
Yeah, that seems like it would be a really unpopular thing to have happen.
Oh, it's super unpopular. I mean, no, listen, everybody had to pay quarterly taxes if you have that tax situation yesterday, and it's an unpleasant experience, let me tell you. So doing it twice will not be fun. I think, you know, maybe we get a veto message today. The next day, or about 5 minutes after that happens, I think the Republicans will probably hold a press conference beating the tar out of the governor. And 5 minutes after that, they'll be in the governor's office saying, okay, how are we going to fix this? Because tax time's coming up. We got to get there.
Do you think there's room for negotiation, that they will actually sit in a room and talk about this?
I actually agree with Livingston. I mean, I think he undersold it. I think they're 85% there, if not 90% of there. I don't think there's that much of a distance, especially when you take into account Prop 123. I think if they all got together and put a little pressure on the feds to fork over $700 million that they owe us, I think that helps out significantly. I think there are opportunities to get there.
All right. We'll have to see how that plays out. Guys, let's talk a little bit about former Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich. He passed away suddenly this week at the age of 59. Marcus, he was somebody who, like, he was part of some pretty high-profile cases. We talked earlier this week about his lawsuit about in-state tuition at these state universities. He was part of the abortion issue, reviving the territorial era ban. He had some part to play in the 2020 election, basically one of the first elected Republicans in the state to say everything was fine here. We don't have to worry about it. When you look back on his legacy in that office, what comes to mind for you?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I mean, I had more than my fair time with Mark, and he would regularly give us a call for political advice, and I will miss him. He made me my takeaway is I laughed a lot with that guy. He was hilariously funny and had the most amazing memory. He was quoting statistics. I was like, how do you keep – now, I don't know about Reggie, but after I had kids, I don't remember anything. it's like a memory wipe every single day. He just had the ability to remember everything. I think, you know, and we're certainly seeing it in some of the social media things. Obviously, he was loved by the conservatives, and I think they were watching that, a lot of that happen on social media. But, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up sort of the Trump recount in Arizona. And that was – for a guy who was sort of what I would say the beginning of this Trump populist movement by going after ASU on tuition, which was, you know – sort of a MAGA thing before MAGA was MAGA. Now he's sort of got scarred with the audit. And so that was unfortunate for him because he was considered a bright and rising star within the Republican, the conservative movement.
Hmm. Reginald, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about, you know, definitely his first term in office, I think, you know, he definitely was someone who, you know, wasn't afraid to go after Republicans or Democrats. I mean, that's something that he definitely, you know, he really was strong there. I know Mark and I, we actually worked on a few things together.
When you were in the legislature.
When I was in the legislature. Yeah. Huh. You know, we had a pretty big bill that, you know, something that many, you know, Republicans were afraid to do at the time was to say that, you know, in officer-involved shootings that there should be outside agencies to actually investigate it. Mark and I, we did a, you know, joint press release on it, and he supported the bill, testified on it and everything. So, I mean, he was someone who really he took strong stance and he believed in what he did. So, you know, I definitely remember him from that.
It's interesting, Marcus, when you talk about laughing a lot with him, because that's one of the things that I've kept reading about how, and I mentioned this when we spoke with his former chief of staff, Joe Canfield. I was listening back to an interview that we had done with him a few years ago, and he talked about how he didn't go off a set list when he did an interview. Like, he would just kind of say stuff, and, you know, as a Grateful Dead fan, you know, he, you know, worked those kinds of references into conversations. Of course, there's the famous nunchuck video that nobody who saw it will ever forget. I mean, he definitely was somebody who seemed like a real human being as opposed to just a politician.
That was a great way to put it. That's what I would have said, is that, you know, we like to say, the man of the people. But he was just Mark, you know, and loved making fun of himself in addition to everybody else. And I think that was part of his charm. And I think it's a quality that's somewhat missing in elected officials today. I mean, some of them certainly are men of the people, but others consider them, you know, too cool for school. So that was part of his charm and his allure, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, his time in office and, you had the Senate run and, you know, later in his career, as you mentioned, the audit, you know, those were some of the things that I think, you know, some people may remember about him. But, you know, ultimately, you know, he definitely, you know, was really strong and really provided, you know, was always approachable and provided really a great deal of service to the state.
The last thing that I will add is he built a bench of staff, you know, younger folks that worked for him, loved him. And really built sort of a family following in his office. And that, for me, says a lot about the character of Mark.
That's interesting. Reginald, let me ask you about the DNC this week. Basically is saying we need to register more voters in Arizona, which if you've been looking at voter registration numbers in the state for any amount of time, that seems like kind of an obvious statement. But they're trying to focus on younger voters. Sounds like they're trying to go after maybe some of the same voters that were voting for Donald Trump during the last campaign. They're starting this effort. They say it's a 7-figure investment starting in Arizona and Nevada. Like, to be cynical, is it too cynical to say this is maybe too little too late for the Democrats in Arizona?
No, I don't think so. I mean, when you talk about, you know, registering voters, you know, most people start to really, you know, jump into voter registration during the year of actual election. So okay. I don't think they're starting too late. I do think that what the DNC is saying is that not only is Arizona in play, but Arizona is absolutely essential to any type of, you know, national, you know, victories. And, you know, the fact is, if you look at, you know, 18 to 34-year-olds, you know, they're not showing strong allegiance to any party, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. They're basically, you know, up for grabs and, you know, having the ability to actually have younger voters talk to other younger voters about issues, I think is extremely important. And I think that ultimately, you know, what you'll see is that, you know, it's going to definitely have some type of investment.
Marcus, is there an opportunity maybe for Democrats here for some of these voters? Reginald referenced they don't necessarily have an allegiance. They seem to like Donald Trump, but maybe don't necessarily care so much about other politicians. Like if it's not Trump on the ballot, maybe they're more up for grabs.
This whole thing's interesting to me because they're going into Arizona and Nevada. Nevada had a Democrat voter registration edge. Donald Trump won. Republicans had a voter for registration here in Arizona. They're increasing that registration. So, you know, I've been saying for a long time, Democrats got to stop the bleed. And I really – that for them, I think it should have started 2 years ago. But, you know, right now you can see them coming and starting to get their footing, right? Now we've got money. We're going to go do voter registration. We're going to target those younger voters, which is exactly what conservatives did. It was actually Charlie Kirk built a business around it, for God's sakes. And so they're going to go do that. In addition, you're watching Senator Warren up on the Hill, you know, basically doing a press conference saying, I've got the message that wins for Democrats. And so you can clearly see the organizing's going on. I think they still – voter registration, I think, goes hand in hand with messaging, and I think Democrats are still struggling to find that message that would move that younger voter.
Interesting. All right. We'll have to leave it there. Marcus Tellertino, Reginald Boulding, thanks to both for coming in. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's Friday Newscap. You can find the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.